This is Ned Kelmer, overlooking the Temple of Jupiter in Rome. On this Nones of December, in the 691st year of the founding of the city, the Senate is about to reconvene for the last day of its special session called by the consul Cicero. The motion that all Rome has been expecting since the session began, the motion asking the death penalty for the five followers of the senator Lucius Catiline, will probably be introduced. Catiline's followers, as you know, have been arrested and accused of conspiring with Catiline to overthrow the government. The law expressly forbids the execution of Roman citizens unless they are tried and convicted by the people. And if the Senate here today, without a trial, carries a motion which sentences them to die, it will be violating the Constitution of this Republic. The Sempronian law, often called the law of Gracchus, is one of the strongest pillars of Roman justice. And many observers fear that if this law is violated...
December 5th, 63 B.C., Rome, you are dead.
The conspiracy of Catiline. The Roman Senate debates whether a threat to the public safety justifies action outside the law. CBS takes you back more than 2,000 years to the afternoon of an historic choice in the life of the great republic. All things are as they were then, except for one thing. When CBS is there,
you are there.
You Are There, produced and directed by Robert Louis Cheyenne, is based on authentic historical fact and quotation. And now...
The Roman Senate, meeting in the Temple of Jupiter, and Ned Kelmer.
Not been announced. The consul Cicero and the Senator Catiline, as you know, are bitter enemies. Cicero believes that the government should be led by a concord of the orders, so-called, that is, a coalition of the aristocracy and the equestrians, or merchants, while Catiline protests that the plebeians, the people, should have a larger voice in shaping the destiny of the republic. Senator Catiline is in Etruria, 100 miles north of Rome, and our correspondent on the scene, Ken Roberts, reports that he is definitely raising an army there, but so far Roberts has been unable to get Catiline to make any statement. This morning, the Senate, upon Cicero's advice, decreed martial law. Don Hollenbeck, down at the Rostra, is ready for an interview with the consul himself, so over to Don Hollenbeck.
Consul Marcus Tullius Cicero entered the forum a moment ago, surrounded by his bodyguard. Cicero, will there definitely be a motion condemning the five prisoners to death this afternoon?
It is my earnest hope that there will be such a motion.
And do you expect your motion to be carried?
Oh, you misunderstand. It will not be my motion. I have no power to make a motion. I have only the power by law to summon the Senate into session.
I understand, Cicero, but if the motion is introduced...
If you please, let me make it perfectly clear. The responsibility for the passage of the death decree will fall upon the whole body of the Senate rather than upon me. I'm only consul of the Republic.
Yes, but is it your personal opinion that such a motion will be carried?
Why do you insist on learning my personal opinion?
Indeed, you show an unreasonable degree of curiosity.
For the salvation of all Italy, the execution of Lentulus and the other conspirators must be carried out before the sun sets.
Yes, but what about the law which prohibits capital punishment without a formal trial by the people?
An excellent question, to which there is a more excellent answer. The Sempronian law was passed to protect Roman citizens. He who is an enemy of the Republic can by no means be a citizen and is not entitled to the protection of the law.
But, Cicero, there are senators who may argue that this point of view is unconstitutional. What can you say to them?
I will say this. Up to this moment, I have delivered the city from conflagration, the citizens from massacre, and Italy from war. But from now on, if the motion is not carried, the conspirators will take courage. Before my eyes, I see this city, this light of the world, this citizen of all nations, falling on a sudden by one terrible tempest. I shudder at the lamentations of nations, at the flight of boys, at the insults of the little virgins. I weep with the father of a family, whose children will be slain, his wife murdered, his house burning, while at the hands of Catiline, the exodus of the city are laid in ruin.
I take it then you favor setting aside the Constitution in the interest of public safety.
And if you all still fail to understand my position, laws are made to protect the people, not the enemies of the people.
That would seem to be apparent. Now, you have only five followers of Catiline in your custody, Cicero. How will the execution of five men prevent the destruction, as you put it, of all the world?
Effectively, progressively, completely. The other rats that are hiding in the sewers of Rome will be smoked out by fear. For they are miserable cowards and will fly from the city to escape our strength and our wrath. And if they merely depart to join the armies of Catiline and Etruria, we shall diminish this horde of rabble to a mound of corpses. Not one creature will remain alive.
Thank you, Marcus Tullius Cicero.
Not at all. Eloquence founded on truth is invincible.
Isn't it, Marcus Tullius?
You see, my friend, I am a humble man, and do not thank the popular.
The consul is going up the steps to the rostra now. His bodyguard is large enough to fill the marketplace in Rome. Cicero is taking no chances. Under his toga bulges a breastplate for protection against the daggers of possible assassins. This is Don Hollenbeck at the rostra. Now back to Ned Calvert.
Julius Caesar, senator and praetor-elect, has just come through the sacred street entrance to the Temple of Jupiter. He's here with us now. Like the smiling but elusive calm of the sea is what Cicero always said of Caesar. Well, Julius Caesar is smiling, and he is calm. This affable and liberal young senator of 38 is perhaps one of the few calm persons in Rome today. Caesar, if I might ask a few questions. The consul Cicero said in an interview a few moments ago that Catiline threatens the safety of Rome. Do you believe that?
Well, not exactly. And let us say more accurately that he is a threat to the status quo, to the sad condition of things as they are in Rome. But when you speak of the safety of Rome, then I say it is Cicero who threatens it.
Oh, will you explain that?
With pleasure. I cannot agree with any man who would act against the law upon the pretense of safety for the state.
By acting against the law, you mean, of course, sentencing Catiline's followers to death without due process of law.
Of course. If the consul, by an illegal decree of the Senate, draws the sword, who is to set bounds to it? Who will moderate its fury? To break the law in one case will set a precedent far more dangerous to the safety of the Republic than the threat of revolution against the Republic.
I see. Well, do you believe, Caesar, that Catiline is plotting the overthrow of the government?
Cicero is a clever lawyer. He eloquently conjures up, in our imaginations, a conflagration of Rome. But I see no fire. I see no murder. No rape of the Vestal Virgins, no aqueducts destroyed. In short, I see no overt act committed. I see only a man condemned for a possible act that he may be thinking about. And I say, you cannot condemn a man for his thoughts, only for his acts.
But, Caesar, if you don't mind my saying so, there's a good deal of alarm in the Senate at the moment. Many of the senators have relatives who were assassinated in the recent Civil War.
True.
These men are not strangers to the most dreadful violence.
More than a pity.
And how about the prisoner's signatures on incriminating documents? How about Catiline's army in Etruria? Isn't that army a threat to the Republic?
If it is, then let us proceed at once to defend ourselves by attacking that army. But what has that to do the question of the Senate breaking the law and putting five men to death without a fair trial? Even if Catiline is guilty, we must protect the law. We must not let the law speak too softly amid the din of arms.
Well, then, why do you think Cicero is so anxious to put these five men to death?
I will tell you why. This conjured conspiracy of Catiline may well be the conspiracy of Cicero to remove a political thorn from his side.
Oh, I see.
I remember Cicero's methods in his campaign for consul when he stood against Catiline.
Yes?
Cicero's brother Quintus drew up a manual for him, a manual of electioneering technique. It said, be lavish in your promises, for men prefer a false promise to a flat refusal. Contrive to get some new scandal aired against your rival for crime, corruption, or immorality. Now, Cicero is following that manual, following it to the letter in his campaign to rid himself of Catiline.
But, Caesar, there are some senators who say that you are the real power behind Catiline, Catiline is your thorn in Cicero's side. Would you care to comment on that?
I do not wish to confuse rumor with truth, and therefore I will also refrain from spreading the rumor that Cicero is likewise a convenient thorn of Pompey in my side.
If I can see that there are several ways of looking at this.
There always are.
But are you going to speak against the motion when it's introduced on the floor of the Senate?
Certainly. I must speak against it. Not so much to save the life of Catiline as to save the honor of Cicero. Cicero is an honorable man, a great orator, a scholar and statesman of the highest magnitude. He has in the past displayed all the virtues esteemed by our Republic. But in this instance, he has allowed himself to be the victim of hysteria, fear, and political intrigue. I would save Cicero from himself.
Thank you, Julius Caesar.
Thank you.
The senator and praetor-elect, a calm and commanding figure, is walking alone toward his bench in the Senate. The session here should be convening shortly. The benches, as I look around me, are almost filled. And behind me, out on Capitoline Hill, thousands of Roman citizens, freedmen, slaves, are huddled now along the slopes in the glare of the blood-red setting sun. Equestrians are scattered among the spectators. Many of them are armed, this on the advice of Cicero, and again contrary to the laws of the Republic. And I... Jackson Beck reports a disturbance on the hill behind us. Go ahead, Beck.
Before the Temple of Venus by a small group of plebeians. It looked for a moment as if Marcus Antonius might be stoned to death, but a man of armed equestrians rescued him and took him to the safety of the Temple of Mars nearby. The equestrians and the plebeians who attacked Marcus Antonius are still milling about here, still shouting at each other. I have with me for an interview one of the attackers, a plebeian, who will not give his name.
And he better not. He's a bloodthirsty.
One moment, please. That was one of the plebeian I'm speaking to has but one arm. How did you lose your arm?
I paid my debt. That's how I lost it.
I presume you lost your arm by the law of the 12 tables.
Yes, I had many creditors like him.
You could have had your tongue cut out, too.
Don't
you
hear it? It's filled with molten metal. I could not pay the likes of this one with money. I lost my land. I could not satisfy my creditors. Who can? With 100% interest rates. They all took 50% of my arms. And with the arm I have left, I will kill Marcus Antonius. I will kill the traitor.
Citizen, why do you call Marcus Antonius a traitor?
He deserted Catiline, and he did it because he was bribed by Cicero.
What sort of a bribe, citizen?
Land, money, what else? Cicero gave Marcus Antonius the whole province of Macedonia to win him away from Catiline. Once Marcus Antonius was our friend, the friend of the poor. Now he is a hired player for Cicero, ready to do his bidding, ready to conspire to kill Catiline for a few hectares of bloodstained earth. It is you!
It is the likes of you who have drenched the earth of Italy with blood. It is you who are conspiring with that guilt-stained soul, that Catiline, who is at odds with gods and men. That Catiline who finds no rest, waking or sleeping, no rest from his guilty conscience, his overwrought mind. That Catiline with his pallid complexion, with bloodshot eyes, his gait now fast, now slow. His face, the face of a madman, a guilty, cruel madman.
Guilty of what? Guilty of helping the poor and the wretched. I'm without land. The law promised that after the war, the large estates would be broken up. Were they? No. Cicero has his palaces, four of them. I have no home. Slaves in the colonies grow corn. Can I compete with the slaves? No. I have no work. Wars. Wars, that's all they know. And long lines before the government granaries for a pittance of corn. If Catiline will give me land, work, put a plow in my hand, free me of debt, is he guilty?
Guilty of what?
You don't want to work. That's why you're poor. You prefer standing in line for cheap wage.
My wealth wasn't given to me by the gods. I won it with my own brain and hand. And now he wants to take it away from me. What shall we do? Cancel honest debts? What will become of trade of the Republic? I have a family to support, too. If he loves Catiline so much, let him go to him. Let him go to Etruria and have his other arm lopped off. Let him go. Let them all go. It's time Rome was rid of this rabble. And who is better than the city now? Thank you, citizens. Thank you. Ken Roberts is ready with a report from Catiline's camp in Etruria. So we take you there now. Go ahead, Ken Roberts.
I am speaking from the headquarters tent of Catiline's army, which is camped here on a great plain in Etruria. We still can't get a statement from Catiline. He's going to address his troops shortly. But here at the microphone is a very charming advisor to Catiline and one of his strongest supporters, the wealthy Sempronia. Sempronia is the leader of what some people call the new women of Rome. Whether she is praised as a Venus or derided as a Fury, both her friends and enemies regard Sempronia as a philosopher feminist who is seeking expression for her sex outside the kitchen and the nursery. That's correct, isn't it, Sempronia?
No. If you mean that we're seeking escape from our duties as wives and mothers, yes. If mean that we women want a larger voice in affairs of state.
Well, you've no doubt heard the expression, Sincoli, in our current in Rome, that all other men rule over women. But Romans who rule all men are ruled by their women.
Unfortunately, that's not true. I wish it were. It's still the men who make wars and indulge in vile politics. Certainly, we could do no worse. I think it's not humanly possible. We wish to rule over no one. Though some men, like Cicero, think we're a danger to the state because we're in politics and medicine and law. They think we're revolutionists because we're learning Greek, studying philosophy, and writing poetry as excellent as Cicero's prose.
Well, if you'll allow me, I think, Sempronia, that Cicero is not as worried about your poetry as he is about your politics in support of Catiline.
No doubt.
How many troops are there here who support Catiline's politics?
That's military information, let us say simply, that our numbers have increased at least 5 times since Catiline's arrival.
Well, is it then true that Catiline was gathering an army here before Cicero accused him of conspiracy in the Senate last month?
I wouldn't quite call it an army, by modern standards. Only 1 in 5 of us is armed.
Still, what's the purpose of this army? Is it, as Cicero claims, to sack Rome?
The men here in Etruria are poor farmers, dispossessed of their land. They're unemployed workingmen who couldn't compete with the slave labor of Rome. They're debtors and army veterans. To be sure,
yes,
they're
not. I know all of that, Sempronia. But Cicero claims there are also politically ambitious men here, former aristocrats and ruined speculators, who are supporting Catiline because he has made promises to abolish all debts.
Well, all our followers are not perfect, nor are the followers of any cause. Even Catiline is not perfect. But whatever his motives, he is the only man today who has undertaken the cause of the distressed. You heard him say in the Senate, there are 2 bodies in the Republic. One is feeble, with a feeble head, and that feeble head is the aristocracy. And the other is strong, but is headless. The people are strong, but they lack a head to lead them. The people cannot expect leadership on their behalf from Cicero. Cicero calls our army an array of rabble, thieves, paupers, and debtors. Cicero, however, is an honorable man, a wealthy and influential citizen. Why? Because he who steals from a citizen ends his days in fetters and chains, but he who steals from the community ends them in purple and gold.
You still haven't answered my question, Sempronia. Why was this army gathered here by Catiline?
You want me to say we're plotting revolution. Very well, I will say it. There have been revolutions in history, you know. Believe me, we would rather have won our rights peacefully on the floor of the Senate, but we were determined, if need be, to fight for them. Now, all that's changed. Lentulus and our friends in Rome have become a symbol, a very real symbol. If the Senate dooms them without a fair trial, it will mean that the Constitution is doomed. The reforms are doomed. The Republic is doomed. Then we shall have no choice but to fight, and we shall not be the attackers, but the attacked. Now, you must forgive me, please. I must speak to Catiline before he addresses his troops.
Thank you, Sempronia. Douglas Edwards is outside on the plain with one of the soldiers who will soon be listening to the words of Catiline. So go ahead, Doug Edwards.
The soldier with me is the veteran of the plague and Victoria Party in Rome. We can't give you his name because his family is still in the city. Soldier, as a former professional legionnaire, how do you feel about fighting with this revolutionary army?
Well, we could use more weapons, but we will have to win with what we have. Rich. They told us we were nasty. the world. But in Rome, there wasn't a roof. There wasn't a foot of ground we could call our own.
Thank you, soldier. We just had word from Rome that the Senate has reconvened. So we return you now from Victoria to Rome and next November.
Down at the Senate rostra, Cicero has called the Senate to order. The consul is speaking now to the senators, the spectators, the vast multitude surrounding the Temple of Jupiter are silent out there. Night is coming on fast. Torches are being lit.
And to whatever point your mind and opinions incline,
you must decide before night. And now, Junior Senator,
you are consular list.
You will follow me when my term expires. If I should ask your opinion, what motion would you make?
I vote that the conspirators be put to death.
Cicero has raised his hands for order. The senators quiet him.
Oh, conscript father, I cannot hear what I hear. Is there one among you who needs to defend the conspirators and traitors of our republic?
No one has answered Cicero's question. It seems that no one will. But no, Julius Caesar has risen.
The public interest is alert. It is strong. But if action gains a footing, it becomes a tyrant, and reason is reduced to impotence. Every now Cicero has harangued you with noble language and told you the misfortunes that will befall the Republic. He has dilated on the horrors of war. For what purpose was this eloquence delivered? To stir your passions. Conscript fathers, I am of the opinion that we should confine ourselves to such punishments as are by law provided. For to break the law is foreign to the spirit of our state. If you break the law, O conscript fathers, take care how your present decrees may affect posterity. For when power has fallen into less worthy hands, the black precedent will no longer apply to the guilty, but will praise the innocent. Am I then in favor of dismissing our prisoners to swell the army of Catiline? Far from it. No, my opinion is this, that their goods be confiscated and their persons be imprisoned in the most powerful cities of Italy. The law must not be broken. For he who draws the sword of injustice shall die by the sword of injustice.
Senator, you have been impressed by Caesar's plea. He seems to have changed no mind here. Now the majority appears to be opposed to the death sentence. Caesar is leaving the roster, but he's not going back to the tent. He's leaving the temple. Cicero has raised his arm. Back to the roster.
Opinions on the motion of the latest?
Yes. I would like to
speak more.
Come forward, Marcus.
Marcus Porcius Cato, the younger, the well-known Stoic philosopher, one of the wealthiest men in Rome, has been recognized and is going up to the rostra to speak. Cato is a stern man. He seldom laughs or even smiles. He has a reputation of being a terror to incompetence, a firm, immovable man, a great defender of the aristocracy. Cato has reached the rostra now and is speaking.
Has just now spoken with quick spoke. And accuracy concerning life and death. But I urge you, O conscript fathers, that you vote for the death of Catiline and his army of conspirators, or they will presently fall upon you with fury. The enemy is hovering over us with an arm, and yet, at this juncture, you delay and hesitate how to proceed against such a conspirators as are seized within your walls.
This is Ned Chalmers. We'll come back to Cato in a moment, but we've just had a report that there was an attempt to assassinate Julius Caesar just after he left the temple.
How
The attackers were then bound to Castrian and aristocrats. They tried to kill Caesar and save Rome. Caesar was defenseless, but he was saved from assassination by plebeians in the crowd. He's now being escorted home by the men who rescued him. Now back to the roster and Cato.
Abandon yourself to stroke and cowardice, and you may invoke the gods, but it will be in vain. They are angry, and are fierce. These ruthless traitors stand convicted of having planned an massacre, a conflagration, and other disgraceful and cruel atrocities against their fellow citizens and their country. Do not hesitate to put them to death.
All
who favor the motion of death, prepare so by the day's time.
Next week, May 23rd, 17-1, London.